Yom HaShoah is a day to speak about the unspeakable. Just 2 weeks ago, at Seder tables around the world, Jews recounted the story of God's dramatic rescue of our people from brutal slavery. This is our time to ask troubling questions. Where was the God of the Exodus when Jews cried out from ghettos and death camps all over Europe? Where was God who defeated the powerful Pharaoh, the God who brought our people to freedom through the Sea of Reeds? Where was the God who spoke to Moses about the Israelites enslaved in Egypt, saying, "I have heeded their outcry. I have come down to rescue them from the Egyptians and bring them out of that land to a good and spacious land." Exodus 3, verses 7 and 8. Where was the God who shepherded us through the wilderness to Mount Sinai, the God who welcomed our people into partnership, the God who promised, "If you obey me faithfully and keep my covenant, you shall be to me my am segula, my treasured possession, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation"? Where was the silent God when Jews and others were being murdered in the years 1933 to 1945? Yom HaShoah is our day to remember those who obeyed God faithfully and kept the covenant, and yet were killed in spite of their loyalty. This is our time to hold God accountable to the terms of our contract. It is only then that we will be ready on Shavuot, the Feast of Weeks, in a few weeks, to renew our covenant partnership. Putting God on trial is an act of supreme devotion to our holy partnership. The noted author and Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel, in his novel Gates of the Forest, tells the story of rabbis in the concentration camp who convened a Beit Din, a rabbinical law court. They brought a case against God, charging God with breach of covenant for the crime of murdering his people. Yaffa Eliach, in her book Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, writes about another lawsuit against God. This case was brought by Miles Lerman, a former partisan whose family was destroyed by the Nazis. In August 1979, Lerman attended an evening service at the Rima Synagogue in Krakow as a member of President Carter's Commission on the Holocaust. There, he dramatically convened a Beit Din, the rabbinical law court, to hear a case, his case, against God. Here were his words as Eliach describes them in the chapter she calls, "Does God Live Here Anymore?" "God, how could you stay here when next door are Auschwitz and Plaskow? Where were you when all over Europe your sons and daughters were burning on altars? What did you do when my sainted father and mother marched to their deaths? When my sisters and brothers were put to the sword?" After hearing about these two lawsuits against God, you might be tempted to ask whether it's blasphemy to challenge the Almighty in this way. But the answer is no. It is an act of loyalty to the Sinai covenant Each partner, human as well as divine, must be held accountable to the terms of this contract. The Almighty promised that those who obeyed him faithfully and upheld the covenant would remain an Am Segula, a treasured possession, a kingdom of priests, and a holy nation. The deaths of the faithful, like Miles Lerman's mother and father, sisters and brothers, are grounds for litigation. Holding God accountable to the divine promise is central in Judaism. The practice has its roots in the first book of the Torah, the book of Genesis, in chapter 18. Here, Abraham confronts God about God's plans to destroy the innocent along with the guilty in the towns of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham challenges God to destroy only the guilty while sparing the innocent. Far be it from you, shall not the judge of all the world deal justly? Abraham asks. And God respects the patriarch's bold gesture when he sides with Abraham's neighbors against the Lord. Abraham is vindicated when God saves the innocent Lot and his family. Now, the story of Abraham establishes a precedent for challenging God, but we have to look elsewhere in the Hebrew Bible to find the roots of the Jewish lawsuit against God for breach of covenant. For this, we turn to the book of Job. Job experiences the painful loss of his health, his wealth, and his family. He and his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, interpret this loss as punishment from God. God is acting, they believe, as judge for some unsuspected wrongdoing. And while the friends believe that Job must have committed some offense that would justify God's action, the hero claims, and rightfully so, that he is innocent. And he goes a step further. He reasons that if he is innocent, then God must be guilty of unlawfully seizing his property. Job charges, "He crushes me for a hair. He wounds me for no cause." Having been a prominent member of the law of the legal community in his area, Job is well known for his ability to adjudicate cases. Comfortable in the legal arena, he takes the unprecedented step of initiating proceedings against his divine adversary for wrongful seizure of property. In chapter 10, verse 3, Job confronts God, asking, "Is it good or lawful for you to commit ashak," the Hebrew word for wrongful deprivation, "to despise the work of your hands?" Without corroborating testimony from his friends to establish his innocence, Job has only one more legal recourse, and that is to take an oath of innocence to force the burden of truth on his divine opponent. Does it surprise you to read in the book of Job that God enters the courtroom? The divine defendant challenges Job to continue his case. "Gird your loins like a hero. I will ask, and you tell me," God says. When God speaks, he appears to avoid answering Job's specific charge of wrongful seizure, and instead he talks about his sovereignty over the universe. And this is some of the most moving poetry in the Hebrew Bible. There is an important purpose to this creation poetry. It serves to correct the too narrow definition that Job and his friends have of divine justice, and that is punishment of the guilty and reward for the innocent. God claims that he does not always act as judge toward human beings, punishing or rewarding individuals according to their merit. The Lord testifies that he is king, not only judge, whose use of sovereign administrative authority may include removal of a subject's property. He directly refutes Job's charge of unlawful seizure when he testifies in chapter 41, verse 3, "Everything under the heavens is mine." God, as king of the universe, has title to all the property in his realm. Job is, as we know from the book of Leviticus, chapter 25, simply a resident alien, a caretaker of the earth. The answer God files in this lawsuit satisfies the plaintiff, Job, who in chapter 42, verse 6, retracts his lawsuit. Job has gained a new and deeper understanding of God's sovereignty and the meaning of divine justice. Although on one level the plaintiff lost his case of wrongful seizure against the Lord, his divine adversary, on another level he's successful. Job has called God to account for his actions, and the Almighty has responded to the charges. The drama concludes in a most fascinating way, with Job receiving twofold what he lost. Perhaps this is God's way of admitting that were this simply a case of human case of wrongful acquisition, the Lord would have been found guilty. According to the biblical laws of theft found in Exodus chapter 22, the defendant would have, that is God, would have been forced to return double what he took. And that's exactly what happens. But there's more. Job acknowledges that our fate lies in the realm of mystery. He says, "Indeed, I spoke without understanding of things beyond me which I did not know." And finally, Job learns a profound lesson that it is possible for a human being to enter into a personal dialogue with God, the sovereign of the universe. With this awesome understanding, Job says, "Hear now, and I will speak, I will ask, and you will inform me. I had heard you with my ears, but now I see you with my eyes." Holding God accountable to the Sinai covenant is at the heart of Judaism, a contractual religion. It is appropriate and timely, then, on Yom HaShoah, not only to honor the victims of the Holocaust, but to challenge God for wrongs against the innocent in defiance of God's own covenant. The festival of Shavuot each spring is a time for renewal of the contract with our divine partner. But each of us may want to ask some hard questions before we feel ready to recommit. As in any healthy human partnership, we need to take time to enter into dialogue with our divine and holy partner. This is important for everyone in a faith relationship with God, whether Jewish or not Jewish. This day is an opportunity to resolve any complaints we might have for wrongs against us or our community. It is an act of profound faith. We might paraphrase Job when we begin our conversation with the Almighty. Hear now, and I, your faithful partner, will speak. I will ask you about the losses, the illnesses, and the hurts that have come to me and or my community, and I ask that you inform me. I had heard you with my ears, and now I will see you with my eyes.